is the dream. The dream is to bring brilliant minds from every nation together to solve the world's problems, one positive pebble at a time. It will be we, the people of the world, that bring about true change, peace, and love to all. Governments never solve any problem, only create them. Wars, starvation, sickness, oppression, financial slavery, death and destruction is what governments do best. When all the military might of nations is used to destroy other nations, the question has to be asked, why not use that military strength for good? Feed the hungry, shelter the homeless, heal the sick, and so forth. True representation of truth, freedom, and justice comes from we the people, and it never came from slick-talking politicians that say whatever they have to get elected, and then regulate away your freedoms. There is no reason to have starving babies in the world of today. Yet, it goes on. There's no reason for wars and sickness, yet it continues. We as the people must stop feeding that beast that is eating humanity alive. We the people of all nations have the power to bring about a literal heaven on earth. You as an individual have more power than you can possibly imagine. You have the power of the spoken word. You have the power of the pen. The power of action, and most of all, the power of love. It is time to use this power to make our world a better place. We are the founding fathers, mothers, sisters, and brothers of our children, and of our children's children's future. Into the future and beyond, what we do today will define the world that they live in tomorrow. Let us, from every nation, come together and make that future a great one.
It was that ant that stood up to me.
Yeah, but we can forget about him.
Yeah, it was just one ant.
Ooh,
one ant.
Yeah, you're right. It's just one ant.
Yeah, boss, they're puny.
Puny? Say, let's pretend this brain is a puny little ant.
Did that hurt?
Nope.
Well, how about this one?
Are you kidding?
Well, how about this?
You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up.
Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life.
It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back.
Does anybody else want to stay?
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. Blast off!
I got a laptop. I make music with my friends. I've got a laptop, baby. I make music with my friends. There it is.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Everybody, you're listening to Mad Science Show at www.shazizradio.com and peopleforpeople.ning.com. People for People Radio. Go over there and check them out. If you want to get over there, join in on the chat over there at superchat.html. Scroll down underneath all the chat rooms and you can click on that banner that says People for People and go over there and say hi to those wonderful folks. So, I started off on a journey about 3 days after my birthday in October 16th, 2007, I joined YouTube. Got on YouTube because I had an idea, but I just didn't know exactly how to get that idea out there into the world without getting myself shot. You know, I've been told back then that there's all kinds of problems in the world, and you know, most of them were energy related and resource related and stuff like that, environmental related. And so I started off on a creative journey to see if I could find other people like me to build what I call the dream team. The dream team, you know, of a bunch of brilliant minds that come together and, you know, have skills that I don't have, and I take my skills and put them together with their skills, and like gears in the machine, we work like a fine, well-oiled Swiss watch or something like that. You know, I don't even know if they use oil in watches. They might use some sort of little tiny bit of grease or something like that to keep the gears up. But anyway, nonetheless. So, I try to do this in a creative way to kind of stick my toe in the water to see, you know, how things would, you know, how people would respond. My YouTube channel, like I said, October 16th, 2007, basically had, by the time it's up to present day, 2,812,476 views. And basically 8,800 subscribers out of that 2,812,046 views. So, at first, I didn't see, and I still, to this day, I don't actually see, you know, the amount of subscribers as far as the amount of views and all that, you know. They weren't really good videos, I guess, back in the day. And as over time, maybe got a little bit better, people got interested in things. But, you know, I just gradually started pushing a little bit of information out, showing little anomalies of this and that. Because I wanted people that would think outside the box and say, hey, you know, I think I can work with that idea and run with it. And I asked questions. If you go look, read the description underneath the video, if it's got a question mark on there, I'm asking a question. Do you think this is possible? Because I wanted people to question what is possible and what isn't possible. I didn't want drones that basically just repeat the school book and all that kind of stuff, you know, verbatim. I mean, heck, anybody can do that. You know, you go to school, get educated, memorize all these things from the textbook. You can do that. It's no big deal. But what I was looking for is people who think beyond those books, people who think beyond the known laws of physics, people who, you know, like in sci-fi world, who want to boldly go where no man has gone before to see how far that we can take humanity and such. So, you know, there is a method to my madness. There's a reason why I did every single video out there. There's a whole lot more to this world than meets the eye. However, back to the problem, there's this phrase called energy poverty. And it means that there's people around this world that don't have the luxury of doing what you're doing right now. If you're actually listening in on this radio show, then you are more fortunate than most folks around the world. They don't have the electricity to, you know, heat their food up, or you know, heat their homes, or you know, light the house, or you know, keep their medicines cool and all this kind of stuff. They don't have that luxury. And so, because they said we had an energy crisis, which I didn't agree with back then, and I still don't agree to today, but there are people in this world who do have an energy crisis. And really, here in the year 2020, there's no reason for it. There's no reason why these folks can't have these same luxuries outside of sheer greed and red tape and, you know, stupidity. You know, the governments of this world, if they really cared about people, the United Nations, if they really cared about people, could have solved this so many years ago. I'm talking, I joined YouTube in 2007. My first video was just a goof-off video, just for basically testing. It's a video called Black Eyes. Really kind of ridiculous, but anyway, it was just kind of throw it out there. All right. So, you know, I moved on. I talked about all kinds of different things. I talked about just about a lot of different subjects out there. And, you know, did a lot of different types of videos. I'm just basically was out testing the waters to see what kind of response I would get out there. Over the years, I got, man, you wouldn't believe how many people cursed me out for ideas that I put out there. All kinds of ideas. And, you know, I was called stupid. I was called everything under the sun. And those obviously weren't the people I was looking for. I was looking for those folks that are free thinkers, those that want to think outside the box, those that want to get things done. We talked about all kinds of stuff, you know, including government corruption. Trying to resolve a lot of stuff in one shot. So anyway, you know, as time progressed, I kept on showing little anomalies of things that were pieces of the puzzle that would show something different about the way we use electricity and something different about things, repurposing different things like, ceiling fan motors, which you can turn into a generator, building little miniature versions of generators and showing people on there. All along, I knew that I didn't care about, at that point in time, I didn't care about the current watts and amps thing. It wasn't that I was interested in. It was plasma technology. It was wireless energy technology. It was Tesla technology. It was, basically taking energy and using it in a completely different fashion, more efficiently. And so, even when I was building these generators, I was studying the effects of the Lenz law and how, you know, whenever you put something under a load, it bogs it down and it creates a second field. And I already had ideas of how to get around this, but I wanted to see how much I could do with just the voltage alone, because voltage is pressure, and that's what science says, that the voltage is pressure. You know, and once you understand that, there's something that you can do with that pressure. You can actually get work done with that pressure. And so I named my YouTube channel Shaziz's Mad Science Channel, the home of high voltage, because that's what I was interested in. Because with high voltage, you can do lots of things, such as energize any of the noble gases into the fourth state of matter, it being plasma. And so that plasma technology, it has a lot of useful side effects to it. At the heart of that plasma, you're talking about a miniaturized sun. I mean, it's hot. It's really hot at the heart of that plasma. And why it doesn't burn up things like, neon bulb starters, the fluorescent bulb starters or whatever, why it doesn't burn that metal up inside there is because it's within a vacuum and it works on the same concept as the incandescent light bulb, which works differently. Incandescent light bulb is a resistive element inside there, known as tungsten. And so it resists current flow and it gets hot, but it uses more energy that way. With plasma technology, it doesn't require that current flow in order to be able to energize that gas into plasma. And so if you look at a fluorescent light bulb, it doesn't take near the amount of power to run those fluorescent light bulbs as we actually use. We got a ballast inside there that takes this ballast from 120 volts, depending on where you're at. You might be on the 220 volt system, but either way, it takes it from 120 volts and it uses the primary to ramp that voltage up, induce a current into the secondary, which ramps that voltage up and sends about 2,000 volts through that at a higher frequency, which then in turn energizes that gas inside there and basically causes the phosphorescence inside it to glow. And so now you have a light bulb. So they're a lot more energy efficient than the tungsten elements. However, there are side effects to that, because they use mercury in these things, that you don't want to break these things because you don't want mercury poisoning and such. So from that, as time progressed, LEDs came onto the scene, and LEDs were yet even more efficient. You could light an LED with wireless energy because the way that it actually functions. It only needs the electron flow. It doesn't need current. Matter of fact, current is the worst thing for LEDs because too much current will burn it up. But all it needs is electrons to flow through the materials so that it releases photons of light, which in turn, you know, they call it a light-emitting diode. So it not only rectifies the AC current to DC, but it actually turns that, you know, it releases light in the process of doing so. So there were advantages to all of these things. And it, with modern-day LED technology, with all the different types of, you know, motor drivers like RC drivers and, you know, brushless motor drivers and such, even in the Samsung and the Fisher and Paykel direct drive washing machines and dryers, they run differently than they used to, and they, and so therefore they're a lot more efficient, but that can actually be more efficient, even more so. So As time went on and I got deeper into all the different research that I did, because I gave my word to the electric company that I was going to study everything that there is to know about alternative energy, and when I got that accomplished, I was going to share it with all their customers for free. But it wasn't just that, it was the world, because the world needed you know, this energy. We needed this energy. You know, we needed to, you know, basically uplift people's way of life, uplift their standard of life. And so, you know, through all the things that I kept trying to show people, I was constantly being trolled by people who I guess believed themselves to be so highly educated that they knew more about electricity, they knew more about everything than I did, you know, and they misquoted the laws of physics to me more times than I can even count. I paid attention in school. I paid attention in science class. I was a very smart young man when I was young, you know, and so I really paid attention. I had a thirst for learning. And so I knew what I knew. I just had to figure out a way in order to put it out there so that people could understand what it is that I'm talking about without getting myself shot. Because all the other alternative energy researchers out there, they went through the same exact thing. They were cursed out. They were called filthy names. They were treated poorly. And when they actually had something that was close to a real working device, well, of course, then, you know, the system stepped in and basically threw up brick walls at them too. And in some worst case scenarios, according to the conspiracies theories of all the things, they were poisoned, shot, you know, disappeared, bought out, threatened, or whatever, in order so that this technology would not actually make it onto the market. They mocked and ridiculed Tesla for, you know, all kinds of things, but Tesla was brilliant. Tesla knew a lot of stuff, and I knew that. I knew what he was talking about. I had studied Tesla for years before I even heard it even come into the mainstream about who Tesla was and what he did, his contributions to our way of life today. And so I knew that his technology would work. I knew that we could use aspects of his technology, including other aspects of other people's technology, such as Edison and such as you know, the folks that invented the mercury arc rectifier. I knew this. I had all the pieces of the puzzle in my head. I knew exactly how to do this as far as producing this energy, but I did not know how to get this information out to the world without getting myself shot. You know, so this whole YouTube channel and the Mad Science Show and all that basically stemmed from a need that was told to me by the world that we had this problem that we had to resolve. You go back in history and you think about the oil Arab embargo, you know, how there was all kinds of stuff going on. Gas prices went from what I can remember as low as 56 cents a gallon all the way up to $1 a gallon, then $2 a gallon, and I even seen it as high as $4 a gallon at one point in time. And it was pure ridiculousness, because I knew at that time that there were ways that you could actually make those engines be perform more efficiently than what they did, so they would therefore use less fuel. And I also knew that there were ways that you could take electric cars and you could make them so incredibly efficient that they would quite literally charge themselves while they're driving down the road. Using all the known laws of physics to your advantage, there is nothing that you cannot accomplish. See, most folks out there that are basically trying to debunk or, poo-poo any good ideas out there, or even perpetual motion or over-unity or zero point, they'll use that terminology and they'll misquote the laws of physics to make other people believe that it's not possible that you could actually do this. We don't need to get out more power than we're putting in. We could actually, in reality, get out less power than we're putting in, but use that power in a completely different fashion to where we don't need nowhere near the amount of power that we're actually generating from those generators. And as far as, gasoline generators or diesel generators or, nuclear power plants or coal-fired power plants or even hydroelectric plants, wind turbines, and or solar panels. All of these power sources are capable of producing more energy than they actually do. They're capable of doing more work than they're actually doing. It's just the way that we're using these things that we're basically, we have a brutal system. This system, the way that we use electricity is so incredibly destructive, not only to the environment, but to our health, as far as, around power lines where you got these massive waves just bombarding you all day long. If you think about the human body is like three quarters water. There's also different other minerals in there, salt and iron and other stuff, but nonetheless, those magnetic waves that surround us all the time, those rock that dipole molecule such as water back and forth, however so slowly. But when you get into microwave technology, that same exact thing occurs, but it does it more rapidly, so rapidly that the water molecules are rubbing up against each other, producing friction, which then in turn produces heat and cooks your food. So knowing that and understanding how that process actually functions will give you a little bit of example of how you could actually get rid of the nuclear power plants and not have to highly refine uranium, because that same electricity that we use to light up our lights, it can be sped up, it can be slowed down, it can be stored. It's incredible. And so, with that said, using the technology, the information that we learned from microwave ovens, that we could literally boil that water at a higher frequency than a microwave. I mean, so rapidly that these water molecules would literally separate themselves into their respective parts, hydrogen and oxygen. Stan Myers figured it out, and he was driving around in a dune buggy in 1979 with hydrogen technology. It was hydrogen on demand. He kept all of his stuff close to his pocket because there were people that wanted to steal his designs away from him. There were people who wanted to suppress that information. See, I knew all of this. I knew all this all those years because I've always constantly kept up with different researchers out there in the world. And I knew we had the solutions way back then. So in 2007, I started a YouTube channel, and I was going to try to do something creative and fun and try to figure out a way to get a message out there to the people without getting myself shot. It's as simple as that. Because I knew that there were more things in this world that were possible than you can possibly imagine, because a lot of that technology, a lot of that information is not taught in school. It's suppressed by society. And in some realms, it's actually taboo. You can't talk about it. You talk about free energy. Just that terminology alone has been ostracized. Free energy. There's no such thing as free energy. You can't get out more than you put in. There's losses in the system. Perpetual motion's impossible. Blah, blah. We've heard it all. But we're told by science that the Earth is spinning around the sun, and it's been doing it for billions of years, according to them. We're told by science that this has been going on, and that the sun has been burning that long. So how long does it have to be before it's actually classified as perpetual motion? How long does it have to happen before you can say that it's perpetual? Of course, now their terminology would be that it's gradually slowing down. It's gradually getting dimmer and so on down the line. Gradually? That many years, and you're telling me that we could not have powered this planet with the same methods? So, you know, I may have been born at night, but it was the last night, and I wasn't stupid, and I basically paid attention to everything, and I questioned all the people out there who were the supposed teachers and professors of the world, because I knew they were wrong. And you don't have to defy the laws of physics. You can stay within the bounds of the laws of physics, and you can still generate power more energy efficient and more easily with less input than you do now. And so, moving on to present time, I'm still on the job. I'm still trying to figure out. I'm still by myself. The dream team never came, as far as the people that actually build things, the people that actually help fund things. We all come together, we pitch in our resources, and we do this thing. Now, I've had little pockets of times where I had a group of brilliant individuals, but they were basically had heavy egos and was looking to go a different direction and didn't understand what I was trying to say. And one of them got mad at me because he said that it's not that simple. And I said, yeah, it is that simple. Water, air pressure, and electricity all work identically. And if you understand any of the one, then you understand them all. They all work identically. And so with that said, using that, and mechanics and the laws of physics, everything that we understand today about real science, then we have all the pieces of the puzzle necessarily to put a perfect device together. But once again, it fell down to resources. It fell down to how many people that I could reach out to, how many people that I could bring to the table and all that. And I made the mistake of telling somebody, I don't care about current watts and amps. The research that I'm doing right now doesn't require current watts and amps. And that's, current watts and amps is a measurement of the way that we actually use electricity right now. The way that I propose that we use electricity, you wouldn't have your standard forms of measurements until you actually got around to the point where you were actually running the devices that you want to run. But to get the energy prepared and bring it into the state where now you'll be able to go back to your old math and be able to calculate that up, you couldn't calculate the voltage there. You couldn't get right to the exact or even in the general vicinity of without something like an oscilloscope. And then with that, you would be just measuring the frequency of what's going on and have to do the math from that point to figure out how much power you were actually generated as opposed to how much you used and then try to figure it out from there. But that wasn't the point. But I lost friends over it because they got mad because they didn't understand what I was trying to tell them. My research didn't require the current watts and amps system. Once I get past this point right here, teaching people how to use that energy differently, store it, and then turn around and use it on the appliances that we got now. So I basically adapted a new version to old technology in order to be able to run everything that we're running right now the way that we do. But what I'm getting to is that it would mean less house fires. It would mean less coal needed to burn in a coal-fired power plant. It would mean less uranium to have to use. It would mean a less gas, or what they like to call fossil fuel, which is another big scam. But regardless, putting all that aside and giving the devil his due, you know, whatever. However we get there to the point where we can put electricity in homes that need it around the world, then, you know, they can call it what they want. All right? And we'll just talk about that later after the job's done. So I'm not here to argue with nobody. I'm just trying to figure out a way to try to put something on the table without getting myself shot that's going to be insured to actually make it to the people that actually need it. So we could help the rest of the world first, and we can help ourselves next. Because once these perfect transformers were designed, then, you know, everyone would know how to do it. And from that point on, the way that you use energy would be completely different. You know, it's time to move into the future. It's time to move on. You know, there was a time for DC current, there was a time for AC current, and now is the time to take what we've learned from both of those, what we've learned from radio technology, what we've learned from microwave oven technology, what we've learned from nuclear power industry, what we've learned from all the different ways that we generate electricity, including solar, wind, hydro, thermal, and so on. Now it's time to move forward and get this deal to work in harmony with nature. And I'm not even talking about some hoodoo voodoo version of you gotta love your reactor or you don't get no free electricity. I'm talking about taking the best of science and physics and putting it all together in the proper fashion, all the proper pieces of the puzzle together in order to use this power that nature has provided in a harmonious manner and be able to not have to be standing in massive fields of electricity in order to be able to have the lights on. It is possible. It is more than possible. The science backs it up. But in order to get that message out there, in order to get the information to the people, I have to try to bounce back and forth between their terminology and my terminology to try to get them to understand. That's why scientists said they didn't understand, Stan Myers, because he didn't speak their language. But nonetheless, it doesn't change the fact that his technology really does work. And it still exists today. But moving right along, you know, they're saying that there's energy poverty in this world. And they're saying that people, you know, are suffering from the deal. The politicians will talk a good talk, but they never get nothing done. They always, the people out there are talking about the Green New Deal, and they got all these plans of how they're going to do this and they're going to do that. Well, why don't we just take it to the simple? Why don't we do what we can accomplish without all that craziness? Without trying to charge somebody for something that nature uses all the time, a carbon tax, which is just pure ridiculousness. Folks, I paid attention in science class. All right? Am I the smartest man on the planet? I don't think so, but, you know, hey, I ain't stupid either. So hopefully today's show, you know, will make a message that you'll want to share with everybody. You know, you'll want to try to get people to listen to what I'm trying to say. I've been trying to say this for a long time. There's a lot of researchers out there that do a lot of good stuff that, you know, their technology with mine and Tesla's and Edison's and all the different inventors prior. You know, all these pieces of the puzzle can bring us into a new era to where everyone can be equal. There is no such thing as an energy crisis or energy poverty. So anyway, I'm gonna kind of bounce around here and there with a few different podcasts, and they're not necessarily in the order that I wanted them, but I want to put a message out there to show that they're saying there's a need. And I want to try to finally get to the point where, you know, I can, basically explain a perfect transformer to you. The technology we got right now is mind-blowing. And it's so ridiculously easy to do. The only drawback of all this stuff is, of course, resource. It's people that have access to tools that I don't have access to. Now, I can make a crude design, and I can get within the range of where I need to be in order to show a proof of concept. But to get it to bear where it actually needs to be for, you know, industry or, you know, mass production and stuff, it's going to take a little bit more. And once the system realizes that I'm on to what they don't want me to be on to, that's when I'm in danger, literally. That's when the system will come against me, and that's when the system will take me down. But right now, because of the way that I use my YouTube channel, which was intentional, people believe I'm crazy, which is fine. They can believe all they want. They believe I'm stupid. You know, some even called me a con artist or whatever. You know, hey, I've been called everything under the sun. Some really foul things. I've deleted more nasty comments to me than you can possibly imagine. Just because I had either a different point of view, or just because I had a different idea, just because it didn't match their terminology or their school book, or they just thought they were smarter than I, for whatever reason, they had to tell me how dumb I was. And it was painful. It was a painful journey. Because I knew. I knew I wasn't stupid. I read book after book after book. I've got old antique books on electricity, the Aldale's New Electric Library. You know, I tried to give them to a friend a long time ago, and, you know, he left them behind, but he was the same friend that got mad at me because I said current watts and amps don't matter. Because they're clinging to that old text. They're clinging to the old technology. They're clinging to the old style of how we've been doing things. And I wanted to move us into the future to something that really works. So, you know, with that said, you know, I've read all these books. And sometimes you got to look backward in order to move forward. You got to look at what they were doing back in the day, the technology that they had back in the day. They had their first plasma reactor back in the late 1800s, early 1900s. It was called a mercury arc rectifier. It was actually used to take high voltage DC and turn it into high voltage AC and turn it into high voltage DC to run Edison's elevator motors that were DC motors that, you know, were already in place before Tesla came into the picture there, before we switched over to AC current. And there were a lot of drawbacks on DC back in the day, but either way, that's another story for another time. But either way, I want to start off with this one right here. This is a pod from TED Talks. It talks about energy poverty. I'm gonna kind of bounce around here and there, but I'm trying to formulate a message because I can't reach out far enough. For some reason, no matter how hard I try, I can't get to enough people to make a difference. I can't get to the right person to make a difference. And it drives me insane. It says that I have 8,800 subscribers, not to mention this radio show and everybody that I keep talking to, Facebook, Twitter, and all these different places. I keep putting the information out there. I keep, basically showing a new idea after new idea. Some of the ideas that I talked about years and years ago, actually, people picked up. And they worked them. They worked, you know. So, I knew what I was doing. I just could not get the message across for some reason. Whether it be, coming up against a brick wall or censorship or suppression or whatever. For whatever reason, a channel that's had over 2,812,476 views only has 8,800 subscribers. And the video views are like ridiculously low for the majority of them. And so, you know, nobody was actually watching the whole program. Nobody was catching the hint. And, you know, I say nobody, but there's a few people that know what I'm working on. And they're waiting. They're hoping, and I'm hoping that we can get things lined out. Anyway, let's start off with this right here.
So, energy poverty, these are two words, right? To me, life in itself without energy is poverty. Why? Because imagine trying to do what we do on a daily basis without energy. We would not be able to work, we would not be able to educate our kids, we would not be able to do anything without energy.
Energy poverty is when you go talk to a grandmother in Swaziland and you realize inside that she's cooking and lighting and staying warm by a fire of some material in the middle of the hut. And you find out from her that the material is cow dung, dried cow dung.
Over 1 billion people do not have any electricity. That's only the tip of the iceberg. About 2.5 billion people only have limited access to electric power. And that's, so you're closing on almost half the population of the world are living in energy poverty, and that's why I say it is the leading problem facing mankind today. Societies where people have access to energy, they survive childhood, they live longer, they eat better, they drink cleaner water, and they learn to read.
There's roughly 1 billion people who live on the continent of Africa. That's about 3 times the population of the United States. Estimates are about 25%, let's say, have access to electricity in their home. That means at night, if you look at a satellite picture of Africa to the south and Europe to the north, Europe is ablaze. People are out, factories can still run, cars can still drive down the highways. Children can do their homework sitting with electric lights in their house. You can be heating and cooking with electricity. In Africa, you will see literally a dark continent at night. Africa's life expectancy is about 55 years per person. The United States is about 76, as are most developed countries. That's 20 years of life lost per person. Why do I say that's linked to electricity? Because electricity is what you use to clean water. Make sure you can drink the water without getting sick, without your kids getting diarrhea, dehydrating, and dying. Water is why Africa's infant mortality rate is about 80 kids out of 1,000 born die before their 5th birthday. In the United States, it's well under 10. Clean water is the holy grail of African health and development.
If you look at a map at night of the Korean Peninsula, you see the great demarcation between South Korea and North Korea, where South Korea is powered by fossil fuels for the most part. North Korea is virtually dark. The children in North Korea, they're shorter, they weigh less, they die sooner. These people all come from the same biological stock. My wife and I have 4 biological children, and then we adopted 4 children from overseas. They were adopted from Korea. 2 of those children were adopted from South Korea, and 2 were refugees from North Korea. When we adopted our son from North Korea, he was 6 years old, and he weighed 35 pounds. I carried him across the parking lot at the airport like a baby. After 20 years of being involved in the United States, civilization, power, electricity, he became United States Marine. And won 2 medals for bravery under fire in Iraq. So that's what electricity can do for you. I saw it happen before my eyes.
The experience of seeing an older gentleman who looked like my grandpa, having spent an entire day gathering twigs and branches off of fallen trees to take back to his hut and carry it back on his back, that was a very powerful experience. It taught me the reality of what energy poverty really is. And if you fast forward to today and look at what is going on in terms of policies that are being conducted in Washington through the World Bank or other lending institutions that have imposed these draconian restrictions on financing projects that would have delivered electricity to people like that, it is really troublesome because there is no connection between the people that are perpetuating these policies and the ones that are actually suffering as a result of it. Fossil fuel is the only answer. Renewables are not going to get it done. The wind doesn't always blow, as we all know, and the sun doesn't always shine, and this is not affordable in many parts of the world. I think we need to connect those dots. We need to let people know that without fossil fuel in many parts of the world, there will continue to be abject poverty driven by lack of energy.
People talk about we should have off-grid power for these nice little African communities. They don't need to be on a grid that links them to the rest of the nation. Just nice little off-grid power. Off-grid is no way to be part of the modern world. You need to be on-grid. And the only way to be on-grid is with coal-fired plants, gas-fired, oil-fired plants. We can help make that energy clean.
Well, if there's any country that should understand the benefits of electricity, it has to be the United States. I mean, the United States went in 100 years from basically a third world country to the most advanced civilization in the world. And what powered that? Electricity. And what powered the electricity? Fossil fuels. Oil, natural gas, and coal. We have the oil, we have the natural gas, and we have the coal. We have the technology. We have the established infrastructure. We have the transportation infrastructure to move these commodities and move them to the rest of the world. By denying these countries opportunities to get access to American energy, such as coal or natural gas, we're condemning people to lives of perpetual poverty. We're not only condemning people today, we're condemning their children.
Stop the madness. So, the thing, you know, that you, what they said inside there about, we need fossil fuel. Okay, look, those folks out there that want to still sell oil, that's fine. We can use that. We can use it all. We can use all this energy. We could still use gasoline and diesel and all that, but we could do it in such an incredibly efficient and clean manner that it would be mind-blowing. But regardless of all that, we have the capability of using technology to take and basically give this energy to everyone in the world for free. That's, you know, when you say for free, if you're a businessman, they don't like that. Alright, you can't have a business and give stuff away for free. But there's got to be a happy medium in there somewhere. There's got to be a happy medium to where these folks could still make money and be happy about it. You know, maybe in the manufacturing industry. I would sign away all rights to a certain design so that they could have all manufacturing money off of the doggone thing, just if I was insured that they were going to ensure that other people who were less fortunate would get to use this. And it would even help the people, you know, the power company's always saying that, you know, you need to cut down on your electric because, you know, it takes us too much to get this electricity and they're getting subsidies from the governments and all that kind of stuff, which is a lie. You know, they do get subsidies, but they're not using near the amount of fuel that they claim that they're using. There's no way. They're using information that Tesla provided years ago in order to be able to service more people at one time. The dirty little secret is that they're making money hand over fist. And they will argue with you till you're blue in the face, till they're blue in the face, or both. No, that's not the case. That's not the case. That's not how it works. I've been told all the lies. I've studied inside their transformers. I know what they're doing with those transformers. All right? And I know how them transformers function. And so taking that in consideration and matching everything else that we got access to, there is a better way. There's definitely a better way. So we can take all the bits of technology, mechanics, and physics that we've got, and we can build perfect transformers to solve the energy poverty of the world. Tesla believed that if he could bring free energy to the world, that he could end wars. Why would you want to go out and fight over oil, you know, if you didn't need it? And even if you could take a little bit of oil and still use that little bit of oil to do a lot bigger job than what it's done, which we have the technology to do. We can get a perfect burn on everything, including firewood. You can build a smokeless fireplace. You know, it takes the soot and it sucks it back down and reburns it and sends it the clean heat out of the doggone deal. So you're not building up creosote inside the chimney and causing a fire if you ain't keeping up on it. We have that technology. We have that knowledge. But the industry hasn't seemed to want to catch on or basically suppressing the deal because there's so many products out there to be sold. And that's what they care about. You know, it's nice that we get to live with luxury, but there are people out there who are literally suffering and dying because they can't get something that we've had all this time. We're living in the year 2020, folks. Now are people that have soot on their ceiling because they can't get access to electricity. It's crazy. It's beyond crazy. So from that one there, I want to move to this one right here.
How far would you go to charge your cell phone if you had no electricity? Would you walk for hours? Miles? That's what millions of people across sub-Saharan Africa do every day, simply to charge their phones. I'm here in Tanzania because sub-Saharan Africa is experiencing a major energy crisis. Modern-day Africa has been transformed by cell phones, but the infrastructure needed to charge those phones and to power sub-Saharan Africa in general just isn't there, and it's leaving hundreds of millions of people in the dark. In the village of Mukuranga, I immediately felt welcome. Since most people don't have electricity in their homes, they go to charging stations to power their phones. Rachel Mango, a healthcare provider at the local clinic, was picking up her cell phone that she paid roughly 20 cents to charge.
Hi, Agora. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
She took me to her clinic's maternity ward, which has no power.
So this is the clinic?
Yes, this is the clinic.
This is a postnatal room. We use it to rest the mother after delivery.
Do you often have to deliver babies in the dark because there's no light?
Yes, men.
Vital immunizations for mothers and children are kept cool by gas from a propane tank.
If there is no power, there is no immunization.
It's getting dark out, and Rachel is about to see a client who is in her third trimester of pregnancy, and she could give birth at any moment. So Rachel basically has to do whatever she can just to make it work.
Tunatumia simu za tochi kwenye simu zetu. Tunatumia wakati mwingine kama mafuta taya, tunatumia taa za mafuta.
Mtoto amelala vizuri.
I want to pause this for a second because there are some old technologies mixed with some new technologies that in combination with one another could actually solve the lighting problem where these folks are at right now as far as, you know, getting dark outside. See, when you talk about off-grid solutions and stuff like that, solar panels, they're always complaining about how solar panels, you know, the sun's not always out, and so they're, you know, not always efficient or whatever. But using a trick, like there's a few people who actually took a 2-liter bottle of water, and they put it into the roof of the house so that whenever during the daylight, the sun would shine down through that and it would refract and it would give them basically the equivalence of a 60 watt light bulb in the room so they could have a light. It's essentially like a, you know, a fancy skylight. Well, not necessarily fancy, made out of recycled, but regardless. If you took that same concept and you introduced some LED technology which doesn't require near the amount of power to run, and you had a battery system, you could insert LEDs inside this bottle And so that whenever the sun did go down, a photoelectric eye would realize that it's dark outside and automatically turn the lights on. And so you could run this throughout the entire night with the amount of power that you could store up during the daytime. Even when it's cloudy out there, solar panels still produce electricity. As long as there's any visible light out there coming from the sun at all, those solar panels will still produce electricity. Not nearly to the extent as if it's in direct sunlight, but still enough to keep charging batteries up during the daytime that would be more than enough power in order to run a lighting system. So if somebody wanted to make some serious money or something like that, you could go out there and you could develop a lighting system that would be standard that you could actually put in somebody's house that would not only look good, but it'd have a built-in solar panels on it. And so when the daytime, it would charge itself up, and then at nighttime, you know, it would shine the light down inside there as well. So you're getting the best of both worlds. You're getting no electricity lighting during the daytime, and you're getting electrical lighting during the nighttime, and so you'll always have lighting. So, you know, to build a custom you know, skylight, so to speak, using the same concept of you know, the water, maybe put alcohol or something like that in there, so the alcohol doesn't, you know, ever get mossed over or grow any algae or anything like that. There are methods that you can do that with. But you could make a really nice looking design that would be, you know, basically completely free from using any energy from a power grid. So the lighting source would be actually the easiest job. And using the same concept of fiber optics, you could take this thing and you could put light in anywhere. You know, you could run this thing around in circles and put light anywhere in the room. You know, they have flashlights that you can kind of bend in any direction, and that light will come from the flashlight all the way down this tube, and it'll come out the other side. So the same concept of fiber optics could be, you know, incorporated into that if you needed light clean down to the basement or whatever. But, you know, these are just simple ideas, but they're ideas that you don't really see anybody in industry taking off and running with it. You know, so what's to stop we the people from making these things, showing people how to make these things so ridiculously simple, using cheap parts that you can buy on eBay, and you know, having replaceable battery sections in there in case the battery ever goes bad. Then you just open the lid and put a new battery in, and you're good to go again for another 6-7 months or a couple years, depending on how long the battery lasts or how long the solar panel lasts, whatever. But this would be a solution for this particular story that we're listening to right now. She's trying to deliver a baby with no lights, you know, in the doggone medical center here. So let's keep going here.
Niko kwenye hard time. Kwa hiyo siwezi kukwepa, ni kazi yangu.
According to the World Health Organization, women in developing countries such as Tanzania are dying every 90 seconds from complications during pregnancy or childbirth.
Would having adequate light save lives?
Yes, will save many mothers' life.
While a few homes in this town are connected to an electrical grid, they often experience frequent blackouts, sometimes lasting up to 48 hours. 18-year-old Hussein Mwende has lived his entire life without ever having electricity in his home.
What do you want to be when you grow up?
I'm studying always, all the times, because I want to be a doctor, so as to help my families and the communities, and to make it a little better for my life. I have to use the kerosene lamps, which affects my eyes. My eyes feel painful, and they sometimes produce tears, which is going out from my eyes. Sometimes I have to walk far distance to find the place where the electricity is available.
It sounds extremely difficult. Do you ever feel like giving up?
I can't give up. I will work hard as I can so as to reach my goals. I will not let the darkness hold me back.
Mukuranga is typical of many villages across Tanzania. Just a few hours away is Tanzania's largest city, Dar es Salaam. It might seem surprising, but Africa has the world's fastest growing middle class. While there still is a long way to go, signs of development are all around. At Noah's Gelato Shop, I met owner Mercy Kitamari. How many gelato shops are there in Dar es Salaam?
So there's like five?
In all of Dar es Salaam?
In Tanzania.
In all of Tanzania?
Yeah.
Why do you think that there are so few?
Because an average person won't even think of doing this business, because when they think of power cards, they just, you don't even think further than that.
There's a blackout right now. You have a generator, that's why we hear this little buzz in the air.
Yeah.
It seems extremely challenging to have this kind of business in a country with so many blackouts.
It does slow you down. When power cuts off, the first thing is the freezers. You freak out. I start thinking, oh shit, I need to hire a generator. You hire a car to bring it. You hire a crane to lift it. And for the generator, they charge you per hour.
So it's very expensive.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, your gelato is melting.
Yeah.
Is it worth it to you?
It is. It has been worth it. It's been super challenging. Super, super challenging. But every day, there's progress.
Mercy relies on social media to build her business. In many ways, her entrepreneurial spirit represents Africa's enormous potential, but energy issues may determine how bright that future will be.
I love my country, don't get me wrong, but there's still a lot of work to be done.
It's Saturday night here in Mukuranga, Tanzania, and we're going to do what the locals do. We're going to go to the movies at the local movie theater. They're playing a local Tanzanian movie. It's called Genge. Is it good? Do you like it?
Very good.
Most people in this town don't have electricity, so they come here for entertainment. Luckily, this place has a generator. When blackouts occur, life proceeds for those that can afford a generator. But for those that can't, it's a different story. There's a blackout going on right now in this neighborhood. Everything around me is pitch black. The stores have closed. The only light is really this candle and whatever motorcycles and cars pass down the road. It seems strange and a little unsettling to be in near total darkness that was beyond my control. But those around me didn't seem fazed. Life is normal here, and in pretty much the rest of sub-Saharan Africa. Thinking back on the people I'd met, they were making it work despite the challenges. And if power never arrives, I'm sure they'll keep plugging away, determined to make a better life for themselves and for others. But charging stations and generators will only go so far. These are some of the friendliest and supportive people I've ever met. They deserve better, and I wish them well. Watch this next episode to meet Hussein's mom and see why she reacts this way to the idea of electricity. How do you think your life would be different if you had access to reliable energy? To learn more about energy poverty, visit one.org/energy. Thanks for watching, and be sure to subscribe to Seeker Stories.
Okay, so that gives you a little bit of example of why it is that I think it's so important to keep doing what it is that I'm doing. Because, you know, if you sit there and you watch and you see all these deals and you know the answer, you know that there's a solution to it, and you're trying to reach out and you try to get as many people as you possibly can involved in trying to push this, you know, out there to the world. It gets frustrating after a while. It gets incredibly frustrating. And I don't know what to do because I haven't seemed to be able to reach the right people in the world. I haven't been able to seem to get the message. I've written letters to senators and congresspeople and all different types of people of power for no response. I've written letters to all, I've put comment after comment. There's a solution for this. There's a solution everywhere. So I've been basically peppering the internet, trying to get information out to people. Once again, had to figure out a creative way in order to try to do it without getting myself, you know, too much on the doggone radar. Every once in a while, sticking my neck out there trying to get somebody to, you know, grab an idea and run with it. You know, I give them the idea. Heck, I'm not in this to get rich or famous or fortune or anything like that. You can't sit there and say that there's a problem and just completely ignore the solution. Any solution. They say that the world is supposed to be, you know, we only got 12 years before, you know, it's too late to do anything. They're already saying it's too late to do anything about, you know, climate change, global warming, or climate disruption, or once again, whatever it's going to be next week when the math don't add up. But nonetheless, giving the devil his due again, the climate people out there are not supporting the alternative energy researchers. The governments aren't supporting them. For the most part, the people are too busy and distracted doing whatever to support them. Most people are not financially able to support them. Most people just don't even care. Some people don't even know. And so, you know, you got to get the message out there. You got, you know, like Chris said in there, when I said, we can do this thing now. We can do this thing. How can I get people to listen without getting myself shot? And he said, by showing people. By showing the people. I've been trying to show the people. If you go back and you look at some of my videos and you see some of the anomalies that I showed in there where I was actually taking my neodymium magnet accelerator and I had not one but six different transformers running around a single wire and was producing energy with that thing. Now, if that thing was perfected, if you had the neodymium magnet accelerator built like it was actually designed and it was perfected to where it didn't have that clicking around every time because it had the split plastic in there, if you could vacuum form the actual track on it and you wired this thing with multiple wires around it, you know, it in the video you can see the magnet spinning around, but in reality you probably wouldn't see the magnet because of the wiring, the way that the wiring be wrapped around it. But either way, the just that video alone showed a different way to use energy than what you're using now, the way you're using it now. The neodymium magnet accelerator, if it was ever, you know, put together precisely and exactly like I'm trying to tell people, that thing would be the new generator. And the key about that is that you wouldn't have to have a huge gasoline engine or a diesel engine generator in order to run this thing. You could run it off of batteries. And the newer style of generator that I'm building as a teaching tool takes all the best physics and puts it in there, and when you see the final product of that, it'll make perfect sense to those out there who are actually building generators, who will start building them differently, realizing that you can use this energy in a completely different fashion than the standard model. So I've been showing people. I've been hoping that somebody would take these ideas and run with them. I don't care if they steal an idea, intellectual property of myself, and steal it and run out and patent it in their own name and take credit full credit for it, as long as the world gets access to it. I don't care. You know? You know, people's telling me all the time, why do you keep putting your deal out there? Why don't you patent this? Why don't you get your ideas on the market? Well, because it's almost impossible to get anything on the market anymore. You got to go through patent attorneys. They got to do this big search. It costs you a lot of money just to get a patent. And a patent only protects you for so long before somebody can change it slightly and then and replicate it and start selling it and making money off of it. So, you know, it's not going to be a permanent fix with a patent. But to get through the patent process in itself is the nightmare. You know, I've been down that road before. And I would rather see people out there having access to the knowledge and be able to utilize it and benefit from it than I would, you know, sitting around for 20, 30 years trying to find a way to get rich. I don't need to get rich. I mean, if I were rich, it'd be nice because we wouldn't be having this conversation right now. If I was a millionaire or a billionaire, I'd already have it done. I'd already have one sitting in everybody's front yard. But I'm not that fortunate to be that wealthy to be able to hire the talent and the resources. See, the companies out there, they've got it made because they go out there and they pick from the best of the best, which is you. You know, we the people. They go out there and get the best engineers, the best welders, the best of everybody out there, and they hire them for pennies on the dollar as opposed to what they're actually going to make off of whatever product they design. So, you know, that's why we're on an uphill battle. And I've been trying to tell everybody, hey, you know, if we pitched our resources in together, if we pulled our resources, we brought all these talented people together, the best of the best, and we did it ourselves, we could put it on the table. And this is the problem. This is why it's so hard to get this accomplished. This is why when I say free energy, you get all the people come rolling out of the woodwork to tell me how stupid I am. There's no such thing as free energy. And you have apologists for the system that will always say this, well, you can't do this because there's always losses and blah, blah. Never mind the fact that I've said it time and time and time again. It doesn't matter if there's losses in the system. We don't need near the amount of power that we're producing. So even if we only produced a fraction of the power and used it differently, there would be more than enough. And these things would be so incredibly efficient. And there are only losses in the system if you don't monopolize on it, such as heat. You know, the internal combustion engine will produce a massive amount of heat. If there was ever a case for over-unity, the internal combustion engine would be that. Because that engine, without the radiator, without the coolant system inside there, without the electric fan, it would literally produce enough heat energy to quite literally destroy that engine. Those engines run anywhere from 160 to 180 to 220 degrees Fahrenheit. While it's outside in the sun, those things get even hotter than that. You've seen people drive down the road and their car overheating and pull off the side of the road. They're producing too much heat. They can't get rid of it fast enough. But what if you took that same exact concept and you use that motor and you use that cooling system? The cooling system is actually heating your house. And you're only pulling electricity off of it for your lighting or whatever. And so there are solutions to every single problem. You can get a generator that has a water jacket in it. You can get a generator to be a dual purpose generator. And so if you're not trying to run a bunch of space heaters off of that, then you're not using near the amount of electricity. And then if you resolve the issues such as air conditioning and you know, your refrigeration, which is also doable, because you can re-engineer those compressors to run off of less. Or you can take the physics and you can take that heat expansion and the cold combination of the two. You can heat up, you know, pressurize a container, release that gas that's built up inside there, that air pressure rapidly, which will produce the complete opposite effect of heat, and it will instantaneously produce cooling. That's how air conditioning works. So there are other methods that you can use to make something as simple as maybe a 2,500 watt or a 5,000 watt generator be able to produce enough energy to run an entire household and potentially two or three houses. So if you're going to be running that gasoline engine anyway, the worst thing for that gasoline engine is the heat, because the heat is what will make it break down. The constant vibration and so on will basically start to tear parts up. But a few minor modifications and some re-engineering of things, and you can get that generator to do a heck of a lot more than you think it's capable of. So anyway, let's move on to this one right here. I'm not sure which one this one is. History, brief history of electricity.
Throughout the 19-teens and 20s, electricity was becoming more and more common in American homes. How is electricity making the American home different? What type of impact did it have on society? Electricity had existed for many years, but it was expensive for individual families to have in their homes. It had also been a difficult transition because most homes and buildings had not been designed with electrical wiring in mind. However, by the late 19-teens, some of these obstacles were being overcome. The introduction of electricity had a dramatic impact on daily life. The most obvious impact was the use of electric lighting. Lamps were considerably brighter than candles or lanterns, which helped improve eyesight. Also, as electric lighting became more available, it eventually proved to be much less expensive than the oil or gas used to light lanterns. It was also cleaner than other forms of lighting because there was no soot or smoke filling the air. The number of house fires dropped significantly because there were no longer as many open flames in people's homes. Manufacturers began introducing a number of appliances and other devices that used electricity. Most of these devices were intended to make life easier. For example, electric vacuum cleaners, irons, stoves, and washing machines all reduced the amount of time the average family used to perform daily tasks. Homes and clothing also became cleaner as a result. Tea kettles, toasters, waffle irons, and many other devices also started showing up in many kitchens. Radios and phonographs provided a new form of entertainment as well. Electric refrigerators also had a profound effect on day-to-day life. These were a vast improvement over wooden ice boxes. Food could be purchased and stored for longer periods of time. It also made food safer to eat because refrigerated food did not grow bacteria as fast. Additionally, grocery stores and markets could offer a wider variety of foods. Produce such as fresh fruit and vegetables could be available year-round rather than just when these items were in season. Electricity resulted in other changes as well. The structure of architecture began to change. Natural lighting was no longer necessary as a light source. This allowed windows to become a convenience rather than a necessity. Buildings could also become taller because electric-powered elevators allowed for quicker travel to the upper levels. It was many years before every community would become electrified. Rural communities in the South would not receive electricity until the late 1930s. However, for most Americans in the 1920s, electricity became an affordable reality.
So, you heard that, you know, even here in the United States, it didn't happen until the 1930s, even though it was already, you know, kind of, you know, new and all that kind of stuff, been around for a while. But, nonetheless, even here in the United States, there were people that did without electricity. We don't necessarily need electricity to survive. It just makes life more comfortable. It helps people live longer because, like you said, when it comes to refrigeration, you want to keep the food cool so the bacteria don't grow and make people sick and so on down the line. So, you know, the technology that was back then was good enough to do it back then. It's good enough to do it now. And since we're here in the year 2020, we have access to even more advanced methods on how to do things. So, how do we get past all the red tape? How do we get past all the government's, basically putting roadblocks in front of everybody and his brother in order to ensure that places like Africa can't, you know, bring their standard of living up? It's crazy. You know, Africa is probably one of the most mineral-rich places in the world, yet they still don't have access to all over the place for, you know, people to be able to have, you know, good health care and all that. There are people out here who say that they care about this. All right, well, what gives then? All right, you all are saying that you need to bring free energy to the world. Why, you said you don't need clean, renewable, energy sources. We need storage. Well, we got it all. We've got every single piece of the puzzle necessary to resolve it. We have it right now. So, what's the problem? Why couldn't we interconnect all the grids together? When the sun's shining way over there and it's dark over here and we need a little bit of electricity, it could come down the line, go over. It's about the political craziness of the whole entire thing. It's about the financial craziness of the entire thing. We can waste millions and trillions of dollars on going around fighting each other all the time, but we can't resolve things for people. You know, and there have been people that wanted to bring water into Africa, wanted to unite all of Africa, wanted to ensure that people would have irrigation and, you know, clean water and all that kind of stuff. Well, didn't fare so well. Because the system is afraid that if Africa ever become fully developed, that it would become a really powerful nation. They wouldn't be able to rob from them anymore. They wouldn't be able to steal from them anymore. You know, but that's the system. The system doesn't care about those people, otherwise it would already be resolved. It's we the people that have to do the work. It's we the people that have to care. They're the ones that come to us to get us to work in their factories, to get us to carry their weapons, to get us to basically comply with the system. We're the worker bees. We're the ones who build this society that we live in. Now, there are other people out there who could benefit from that knowledge, could benefit from the technology. But we're not allowed to help them out for some reason. And those who try are up against, things like pirates and corrupt governments. It's insane. It's completely insane. But if this message that I'm trying to share with everybody today could literally span the globe, and people realize that there was an option available, you know, the perfect transformer in my mind is so ridiculously simple. We got transformers on the pole outside, and they feed into a digital power source that they don't even have to come out and read the meter anymore. All they got to do is look at the computer and see how much energy you've used. And charge you for it. Probably even charge you for the upgrade in the meter. Plus they're throwing taxes on it. So what if we had our own transformer where we could take just a little bit of electricity that they got and use that little bit of electricity to magnify it and get more work done for less input? It is more than possible. It's scientific proven fact. But everybody's so used to just going over flipping the switch. Some people in other nations can't have that luxury of just going over and flipping the switch. But there are solutions available to build technologies that would make it to those people. And even if they only had one generator, you could light that entire town if you use the modern day technology, and this method that I'm talking about is so ridiculously simple. There's technology inside your TV sets. There's technology inside the modern-day microwave oven. The modern-day microwave oven doesn't even have a transformer anymore. It's an induction-style system that uses basically the equivalents of a, doggone tip 42C transistor, resistor, and a diode that's basically a really fast-acting switch that turns the power source on and off rapidly and ramps up the voltage to a higher voltage. That's it. Instead of using a primary and a secondary, it uses induction technology to do it. We got wireless charging systems that use the same process. We've got RC cars that have a motor controller in there that will run a brushless motor. They'll run a larger brushless motor than you can imagine, because those doggone motors don't care where that magnetic field comes from. And if you're not cramming more power to that motor than that motor can handle, then you don't have that feedback from that motor that is causing things to burn up. So using that, using all the knowledge from inside that transformer that's out there on the pole, and all the best physics and all the best mechanics and science, all the best pieces of the puzzle put together, you can build the perfect transformers. These transformers also act as a storage as well, using capacitance. So with that said, you have a generator that with a small input, you can pulse this transformer and be able to get the amount of power necessary to run your devices without being so destructive. So even a minimal amount of solar power would be more than enough to charge up a bank and use that power, that stored energy power, to run a device that didn't require near the amount of power that a modern day inverter system would take. Modern day inverters are ridiculously misengineered. They're not nowhere near as efficient as they could be. And they take more power. And then when you load it down in the standard model, it's obviously going to drain more power from that battery quicker. So everyone out there who has solar panels have inverter systems to turn that DC current into AC current from the batteries to run their appliances, and they're doing it wrong because they don't understand how that energy actually works. They don't understand how it actually travels. I do. It's ridiculously simple. And so, with that said, the amount of copper wire needed to actually build a perfect transformer is a lot less than the standard model, because you're not using it in the same fashion. If you understand how this energy is working, and you use a few tips and tricks that Tesla taught years ago, you can get these generators to be so incredibly efficient, produce massive amounts of high voltage, which is the pressure that is needed to pressurize containers to hold that energy until you need it, and release that energy like opening the floodgate. So, let me see what this one here is.
In 2012, the United Nations launched its effort to fight energy poverty worldwide, marking the International Year of Sustainable Energy for All. Energy poverty is considered a lack of energy infrastructure and resources. Roughly 1 in 7 people around the world lack access to electricity, almost exclusively in developing countries. Although things are improving, many have said that too little change is happening too slowly. So we wanted to know which countries don't have electricity. Well, it's estimated that anywhere from 1.1 billion to 1.3 billion people live without electric power. To make up for a lack of deliverable energy, nearly 3 billion people around the world use coal or wood fuel for heat and cooking, contributing to deadly pollution. This pollution is thought to be responsible for more than 4 million deaths every year. The overwhelming concentration of energy poverty is found in sub-Saharan Africa and rural India. Over the past few years, India has dramatically improved its power infrastructure, and in 2014, it was the third largest electricity producer in the world. Yet roughly 300 to 400 million people without electricity live in rural Indian states. And even for those who do have power, the energy grid is notoriously unreliable. In 2012, a nationwide blackout affected more than 600 million people. Although the Indian government has launched efforts to provide 24-hour power to the entire country, some have accused politicians of only directing energy to politically important districts. While India has made some progress, sub-Saharan Africa is still struggling. Altogether, Africa has about twice as many people without power as India, roughly 600 million. The country with the least access to electricity in the world is South Sudan, which also has one of the lowest education and literacy rates as well. The World Bank noted that in 2012, only 5% of the country's 11 million person population had electricity. In fact, across all of sub-Saharan Africa, only about a quarter of people have access to electric energy. What's worse is that the lack of electricity means that power is considerably more expensive, with electricity costing 3 times as much as it might in the rest of the developing world. Additionally, on average, African manufacturers suffer nearly 2 months' worth of power outages a year, severely disrupting economic progress. In the past 2 decades, as energy dependence has become increasingly important, Africa has only received about $600 million annually in energy assistance from foreign countries. The UN Sustainable Energy Goals are focused on providing universal access to power and clean fuel, doubling the amount of renewable energy, and doubling the rate of energy efficiency. Efforts like President Barack Obama's Power Africa initiative are focused on bringing foreign advisors and financial help to figure out how best to invest in Africa's energy infrastructure. Still, despite these efforts, the World Bank has said that there needs to be considerably more sustained investment to even consider meeting those goals. To see my recent report from Tanzania and the different ways in which the people there are hacking the energy crisis, check out this video. It's getting dark out and this facility has no power. Rachel is about to see a client who could give birth at any moment. So Rachel basically has to do whatever she can just to make it work. And to learn more about energy poverty, visit one.org/energy. Thanks for watching.
All right, because I've been jumping around, that podcast that she mentioned at the other, we already played that one right there. So I want to play one more. We've already heard the problems. We have the solutions. It's just the fact that how am I going to get people to listen to them and actually act upon those ideas and solutions? That's the key. But anyway, I want to go ahead and play this one. This is one from TED Talks. I get a couple mixed up, but I told you I was going to be jumping around from here to there.
Meet Fatime. Fatime lives in Chad, near the border with Sudan. She lives in a UNHCR-sponsored refugee camp. This is her with her daughter. It's about 35 kilometers from the border with Sudan, where she left in 2004 due to war. She lives in a camp called Iridimi, and this camp is one of about 10 in the region, and it has about 25,000 people. Fatime is the chair of the Women's Council in this camp. I met her in 2012 when I was working with the UNHCR to look at solar options for refugee camps. I asked her, what is the biggest challenge facing women and girls in the camp? And she said to me, firewood. Firewood? Yeah, firewood. Okay. She said, the women and girls go out to collect the firewood because they have to cook the meals. And at first it was okay. They would go outside of the camp and collect some wood, but the wood became more scarce. So they would have to walk further and further afield. They would walk 10 kilometers and then eventually 15 and 20. And now they're walking up to 35, 40 kilometers back into Sudan to collect firewood. And the problem is they have no protection. And she said, and then we have the troubles. I said, troubles? She then turned to her interpreter and said something in Arabic, and the interpreter said, Steve, troubles mean rape. And then she said something else to the interpreter, and the interpreter said, Steve, Fatime has had troubles. What? It's 2014, and women and girls are forced to go and collect firewood to cook their meals in a UNHCR-sponsored refugee camp and are repeatedly being raped? Can we do better?
Let's pause this for a second.
Can we do...
Because if you listen to what he just said a minute ago, not just the rape issue, but the year, the actual year, they were talking about the same thing I'm talking about today in 2014. So, with that said, you know, it is 2020. And the system isn't going to get it done. It's going to be we the people that have to get this done. I don't know how to stress that any more than not what I've already done so many times. That's why I call it mad science, because it really makes me mad. It really makes me mad that we have the solutions, but yet we cannot seem to get our act together and get this job done. It's so ridiculously simple. In the right doggone facility, with the proper tools and those with talent, we can put everything that I've been telling you into a prototype and prove it once and for all. We don't even have to call it free energy. We just go with incredibly efficient generator. And then whenever the public has it all, this knowledge all in their head already, they see this thing, they'll figure it out for themselves. That free energy does exist. That with one little supplementary solar panel to charge a battery bank and running this little circuit to run this generator motor, that it will do the job. That's simple. And then from the transformer into your house, how you use that energy completely different and more efficiently than ever before. Think about what I'm saying, folks. If you got an air conditioner in your kitchen, and you got a stove in your kitchen, and you got a refrigerator in your kitchen, you have two things working against that air conditioner. The air conditioner is trying to pull the heat out of that room. It's trying to use that heat transfer to pull that heat out of the room and cool down that room. One of the byproducts of the refrigerator is that those coils on the back get hot. And so why are those coils not vented to the outside to keep that heat out when you don't want it out? And then during the wintertime, you're not trying to cool the place down, you're trying to warm it up. So you switch the vent around, and now that heat from the refrigerator is actually helping your electric motors or your electric heaters or whatever to add to the heat in the room. And when you're on the cook stove, same exact concept. You got this AC that's fighting against that cook stove. There's ways that you can vent that heat without sending it into the room. So, if you think about basic science, heat rises and cold air falls. We've got systems where both the heat and the cooling go either through the floor, or both the heat and the cooling go through the ceiling. So if you separated them into their two perspective ducts, cold air through the ceiling and hot air through the floor, the heat would rise and the cold air would fall. And that would make it yet even more incredibly efficient. So there are solutions to every single bit of this. And these solutions could be brought to these people clear across the world, and an energy generating system that would be affordable for everyone. So, what's the problem? Let's keep going here.
Better? I think so. My name is Steve Huff, and I do work with a foundation called the Light Foundation. And one of the things that we focus on is energy poverty. So what is energy poverty? It quite simply is the lack of access to clean, renewable energy. Energy poverty primarily affects health care, education, and economic development. And women and girls are affected most of all. Now, there are groups out there even some great Silicon Valley companies that are working on cook stove solutions, great innovative technologies, and I love innovation. I'm an innovation junkie. I love it. But innovation without lack of understanding of what the core issues are and the problems is useless. So what are the other core issues that Fatima faces when she cooks her meals? It's not just that she has to go and collect firewood and put herself in danger. It's the actual fuels that she's using are killing her. Because what happens in the developing world is we're cooking with wood or charcoal or, worst of all, kerosene. And we're cooking in confined spaces. And so we're creating this toxic environment. It's like a soup where we're breathing in these fumes. Here's Fatima's kitchen. You can see the ceiling and all the soot on her ceiling of her kitchen. So what happens is women are breathing in these fumes. The World Health Organization said that women who cook with kerosene have the same lung capacity as a two-pack-a-day cigarette smoker. And worse still, kerosene, which is the leading cause of indoor pollution, kills more people annually in the developing world than HIV and AIDS combined. Can we do better? Yes, we can. Think about healthcare for a moment. Think about 400,000 medical clinics in Africa who don't have access to light or power. Here's my celebrity photo op. This is with celebrity chef Matt Galinsky. Matt and I were in Malawi about 8 weeks ago, and we were installing solar in schools and medical clinics. One of the other things that we did in the medical clinics is we were able to provide some lighting to some midwives. And this midwife, although she doesn't really look it, she was excited. And she was excited because she was going to have a solar light to deliver babies by. She delivers 1 to 2 babies a night. And she said, I don't have to use candles anymore. Can we do better? Yes. What about education? Think about your own school. What if it didn't have light or electricity? What if you couldn't do homework at night, or your children couldn't do homework in their home? This is James. James is an orphan living in Malawi. His parents died of HIV/AIDS. And this is the first time, this photo represents the first time he has ever done homework at night. He's 16 years old. Can we do better? I think so. Lighting in schools is not difficult. And education provides a tremendous opportunity, particularly for women and girls. Bring out your dead! Bring out your dead! How many of you remember that movie, The Search for the Holy Grail, Monty Python? Great movie, and I love this scene. It's a macabre scene. It's the Black Death, the plague, and there's a guy pushing a cart through the middle of the village and shouting, "Bring out your dead!" And people are coming and throwing bodies on the cart. It's really gross. And this one guy gets up and he says, "I'm not dead yet." And someone says, "He will be soon." And he says, I'm not dead yet. I'm feeling much better, actually. I think I'll take a walk." And he walks away. "I'm not dead yet. Say it." It's like a little holy mantra. It's like a little prayer you can say every time you get up in the morning. You can say it as you go through your day and interact with your friends. "I'm not dead yet. Say it." Now say it to the injustices of the world. To women and children who are abused and neglected. To broken relationships. Say it. "I'm not dead yet." Now say it to people who have to spend 40% of their monthly income on fuel sources that are killing them. To children who can't do their homework at night because they can't see. Or who, worse yet, fall into fires or are burnt by kerosene. Say it. "I'm not dead yet." Now say it to women who have to cook and their only fuel source is giving them lung cancer and killing them. Or they think to themselves, "Oh my God, am I going to get raped again when I go get firewood?" Say it. "I'm not dead yet." And because you're not dead, life is not through with you. Because you're not dead yet, hope is still possible for you in the world. Light is still possible for you in the world. It's a wild, wacky world out there, folks. I have been to some dark places, literally and figuratively, and I know that some of you have been in the darkness as well. But of all the power of the darkness in this world, light is more powerful. And it will win every time. If you believe, like I do, because we're here, that you're not dead yet, And if you believe that the answer to the question of can we do better is yes. Thank you, and be well.
Well spoken, well spoken. So, you've heard all the problems. You've heard a few fractions of the solutions. And so, with that said, now, how do we get the solutions out there into the hands of those who need it? We got our work cut out for us if we try to work with the system. But if we don't try to work with the system and we work amongst each other, we can get it done. We can do this thing. We can resolve this so-called energy poverty, energy crisis, or whatever you want to call it. And we can figure out ways by which to get the necessary energy to the people so that they can too have clean water and medicines and lighting to give birth to babies and such. We have all the technology necessary to do it. When you got a country that is as beautiful as Africa that has as many people that are doing without in the year 2020, while we're sitting on all this technology and all this knowledge, it's a shame. It's a crying shame. And I don't get it. I just don't get it. In the Super Chat room over here on ShazizRadio.com, I've got 6 people in there. 3 of which is me. In the People for People radio chat room, it looks like there's about 6 people in there. We've been sitting and talking about solutions forever. Looks like I'm down to 5 in the Shaziz radio chat room. It's mind-blowing. I mean, I'm grateful for everyone who does show up here, but I don't understand why it is that whenever you're trying to offer up a solution and show people that there's a way to fix this, that you can't seem to draw a crowd, so to speak. It's mind-boggling. Because I got Facebook, and there's almost 600 people on my friends list in Facebook. How many of them 600 people actually share the messages that I push out is must not be very many. It does, you know, the YouTube channel that says I got 8,800 subscribers. It has over 2,812,476 views. How many of them people shared the content? How many of them people actually took the time to try to listen in on one of these broadcasts? How many of them people are even real for that matter? So this is why it's so hard for me to try to explain to people why I don't just throw it right out there on the doggone table. Why I don't just throw it out there. According to the numbers, I got 2 people in my chat room. But I'll talk to these 2 people as long as they want to listen. I'll still tell them the same thing. But sometimes it's as if I'm preaching to the choir. I don't understand this. I've reached out to people of a supposed authority, people of representation. I've reached out to companies and corporations. I've reached out to everyone and his brother and tried to give this information to them freely. And I just can't seem to get the doggone job done. So it's frustrating. Yeah, I know how to build the perfect transformer. It's ridiculously simple. But the tools the materials, the way that everything needs to be done so that it can match what needs to be done for manufacturing purposes. Somebody who can sit down and draw out schematics or run a CAD program or do the things necessary to ensure safety and all this kind of stuff, that I can build a junky prototype. I've made tons and tons and tons and tons of prototypes. But it needs precision. It needs precision bearings if it's going to be moving. It needs precision mathematics. It needs precision parts, measurements, construction, so that when we put it out there to the world, that it's irrefutable, that there are no ifs, ands, or buts, no excuses why the world can't have access to this technology. This is the problem, folks. This is why I do what I do, and I hope for the best. Mad Science Show, it's more than just a show to me. I've pretty much begged and pleaded for people to share these messages, and there are people that do share the messages. And they help. But as many people out there that say they want free energy, as many people out there that say they want to fix the world, doesn't match the numbers. It doesn't match the numbers of the listening audiences out there. It doesn't match the numbers of the supposed YouTube views and the number of subscribers, the number on Facebook, Twitter, all that. So it's almost like either my voice or my method is so messed up that nobody cares, or it's just a simple case is they either aren't hearing it or refuse to hear it, or they just don't care, because the solutions are available. I mean, I can explain to you in graphic detail how to build everything. Do you have the resources to build it? Do you have the tools and the technology to build it? You, by yourself, would probably achieve exactly what I did. You would get a prototype that is wobbly, probably not perfectly straight, with substandard materials or whatever. You would do the best that you could with recycled parts, repurposed. But to build it to the state that it needs to be requires a whole lot more than what I have capabilities of. Once I get my new lab together, which I'm still working on, but I'm at a standstill because of financial issues as far as to finish the thing up, because I not only want it to look good, I want it to be such as that whenever I put a project on the table, you can see it clearly, you can understand exactly where every single wire goes. I want to make it so ridiculously simple for people to literally snapshot a picture of it and replicate it and steal it if they like and run on down the road. I don't want to leave no margin for error. But I've tested the waters over and over and over again. I've tested the waters since October 16th of 2007. I've watched many alternative energy researchers come and go. I've watched many of them get discouraged. Many of whom had discovered all kinds of good things, that their pieces of the puzzle together would have benefited the world. And that's what I'm up against. Anon0047 said, laugh out loud. About what? Sorry, my friend, I just don't know what's funny about it all. It takes a lot of money to do what I do. And I'm not asking for any money from anyone. But if you got an idea and you try to share it with the world and you come up against as much trouble is all these alternative energies, energy researchers and myself. I think the laugh out loud had to do with Barry's people are zombies. Yeah, they are. Unfortunately, that's the world we live in today. But anyway, moving right along. Let's see what this one is.
We use electricity for almost everything. We use it to wash our clothes, keep our homes comfortable, enjoy entertainment, and protect our food and medicines. Every day, we're adding new power-consuming devices that we're increasingly dependent upon. One of the fastest-growing demands on energy is the cloud. A huge collection of wireless transmitters, data centers, and factories where devices are built, each with huge power demands. With all of our devices constantly accessing the cloud, along with new technologies like cyber and cryptocurrencies, we must continue to generate a massive flow of electricity just to keep our modern lives functioning.
That's from Life Powered. So you heard all these different things, you know, even the industry. Yeah, the industry itself, if they would listen. You know, the power industry, they say they need more power. They need more, use less appliances. We need more power. Yeah, I figured that out, Barry. I'm just kind of frustrated. That's, you know, it's just, I don't know. This is a big deal in the world. There's a lot of people that need help. I got the knowledge on what needs to be done to help them. I don't have the communication skills, obviously, to get the job done. Or I'm not reaching the right people or enough people to get them motivated into going into their own communities and getting the job done. So it becomes frustration after a while. And I, unlike a whole lot of other researchers, have bared through the whole thing. Build it and they will come, sort of thing. You know? I built it. I'm building more. I'm continuing my research. I'm going to do it because I believe in the cause. And even if it comes down to where I've only got one person listening, if that one person's listening, or even two, and they act upon that or share it, maybe we'll get up to three or four or five or six or seven before it's all over with. They say there's 6 degrees of separation between us and who you know. That through six people, you know somebody else who knows somebody else who knows somebody else on down the line. So imagine that chain of information going from hand to hand. That's why it's so important to share this. You know, I could go out and advertise on Google this website. I can pay them to advertise. But Google themselves, through their own software, hinders my website. I pay for a secure certificate. Because I use a chat room such as Chatango, and they don't have something, I get tagged on my site as not secure. And it's frustrating because I know it's secure. But Google does that kind of stuff to favor other websites that they want you to go to. And the doggone YouTube, the same doggone thing, which is, YouTube and Google are basically the same company. So the big industry keeps us from talking to each other. And the only way that we can get around their algorithms and their artificial intelligence is to literally pass the note in the classroom. For you to take a link and pass it to somebody. Hey, check this out. Check this out. Be here at this time. Check this out. There are solutions to what we've been talking about. You want to fix it. Let's get it done. Yolant said, do smart appliances rely on the cloud? We don't have any, but lots of people do. Well, those smart appliances, you know, they're not necessarily smart for you because they're basically spy equipment is what they are. And they can tell, you know, where your energy efficiency is or isn't. Heck, they even talk about one day they're going to be able to tell exactly what's in your refrigerator and remind you and all your advertisers about what you need to buy when you go to the grocery store. So, you know, it's crazy. I'll see you later, Barry. But this is the thing. They got smart meters. They don't even have to come out to check the meter anymore. You're paying for that. Even though they don't have to send a person out here anymore, they can just look at the computer and tell how much electricity you use. And the way that they sell appliances out there, the way that we use electricity in the destructive manner that we are, is costing us more money because they reach their thermal breakdown at some point and parts begin to fail. Well, by understanding how energy actually moves around, by understanding what we call electricity, you can use it in a different fashion to where your appliances are no longer getting hot. They're no longer capable of reaching their thermal breakdown point. And so they will not fail. You'll have refrigerators lasting triple the time, if not more, than what they're doing now. Your computers, everything. If you keep that computer clean, if you don't allow it to gather dust, then it'll never get too hot and it won't burn up the parts inside. So if you have a way to keep that thing cool, if you have a way to keep the dust out of it, you know, simple cases, you get your computer and you blow the dust out of the back of it, you know, every so often just to keep those heat sinks and everything in there cool. But those computers don't even require near the amount of power that you're shoving to them. And so we're pushing too much power to them. So that's why we have to have heat sinks and fans in order to keep them cool. Those parts don't require near the amount of power to run. They'll run on so much less. So we got to get smart about the way that we run our appliances. We got to get smart about the way that we engineer our appliances if we're ever to save money. But if I can show the world a way that every single household out there could literally use less energy and get the same job done. For example, nichrome wire, tungsten element wire. I did a video some time back called Vacuum Spark Gap, where I took an old, and Raymond actually got to see this. I took an old headlamp, incandescent headlamp from a vehicle that was burnt up. You can't hook it to a 12 volt battery direct and get it to run. So I used a high voltage, high frequency wave, and I used that vacuum in there and that gap between that broken tungsten element to keep a steady spark going to a Tesla coil. But at the same exact time, while that energy is going through there, that vibration of that high voltage, high frequency going through that tungsten element heated that light bulb element up and produced light. So I lit up a dead light bulb with that thing. And fluorescent lighting, even when the heating elements inside them go bad, you can still light them up with high voltage, high frequency. So, by understanding that, nichrome wire is built to resist current flow. Tungsten is built to resist current flow. It's that current that's being pushed through there that causes the thing to get hot. The current is what causes everything to get hot. Once you understand that, then you got to figure out a way to not use so much power in order to be able to do that. Well, the key is in the frequency range of the voltage that you're actually putting to that. You can literally put a higher frequency, higher voltage into it, less current, and get that thing to vibrate to the extent where it gets hot. and does the same exact job for less input. It's ridiculously simple. And it's scientifically provable. All I got to do is get the right people to pay attention to what it is that I'm saying. You want to talk about incredible energy efficiency? You want to talk about incredible energy storage? I'm the man to talk to because I did my research. I've studied every doggone alternative energy thing that you could possibly imagine out there, even the ones that were fraudsters. And I sat in on one with Cashy, and basically I told him it's the biggest hockahooey I've ever heard in my lifetime, and hung up on the Skype call. He was scamming everybody and his brother, making a lot of money doing it. It was sickening. But regardless, there's something to learn in everything. So with that said, let's click this one here.
If you look at a map of the U.S. power grid, it looks like a spider web blanketing the entire country. It's a patchwork that formed after communities that got their power locally were slowly stitched together to create a massive network. So, could we scale that up even bigger? Could we connect the entire world with power lines? What would that do for us? And what would it look like? The most obvious technological hurdle is transmitting power over extremely long distances, which is something of a recurring theme. Back in the 1880s, when the first power plants were coming online, Nikola Tesla's alternating current duked it out with Thomas Edison's direct current in the War of the Currents, the original AC/DC. Alternating current means the electrons in the wire reverse direction rapidly, while direct current provides a steady stream of electrons. AC eventually won out, because at the time, it was easier to convert AC power to higher or lower voltages. And higher voltages are needed to travel longer distances with less energy loss due to resistance. Direct current has another disadvantage.
Pause.
At high voltages, DC could only be used to send electricity from point...
Did you hear what he said about how higher voltages meet less resistance? If you're trying to shove a lot of current, which direct current would be doing, trying to shove too much current, you can only get out so far because of the resistance. It's all backing up. But with higher voltages, you can get that high voltage to not experience the resistance. And this is what I've been trying to tell everybody. You get this high voltage, you can send high voltage way down the line. On a single wire system, you can send high voltage way down the line. And if you know what to do with it when you get to the other side on the transformer and the capacitor issues right there, you can store that power, step it down with the wave that's coming in and out. So you wouldn't need near the amount of power that you're sending down those power lines, and you could therefore be able to send it even farther. But even better than that, with a perfect transformer, you could have that transformer only take what it needs to run your house and ship the rest of it right back down the line to the next one over. So you could ramp it up when it comes to a certain section, hit that amplifier, send it down even farther than that. You can supply more people with less energy that will do the same exact job without all the losses and the resistance in the system. So it's not rocket science. It's real science. It's mad science.
A to point B. It couldn't form the sprawling integrated grid networks we need for a stable electricity system. So, in this match, it's Tesla 1, Edison 0. But fast forward to the present day, and DC is making a comeback. Not just because it's everywhere, since our phones, laptops, and anything with a battery runs on it. It's also because it's becoming a more viable method for long-distance power transmission, thanks in large part to China's geography. Most of China's population is concentrated in the eastern part of the country, more than 2,000 kilometers away from most of the country's sources of coal in the northwest and hydroelectric power in the southwest. Typically, AC power lines with a voltage as high as 765,000 volts have a max transmission distance under 500 kilometers. To generate power one place and send it across the country, voltage would have to go up. So the government-owned utility State Grid of China collaborated with experts in high-voltage power transmission, like German company Siemens, don't laugh, it's German, and Swedish power group ABB, not to be confused with the other Swedish power group, ABBA. Soon, State Grid surpassed the other companies and started developing their own high-voltage transformers and power lines. In 2009, they built a 1,000,000-volt AC line, and in 2010, they built the world's first 800,000-volt DC power line. By the end,
I want to pause that again for a second. You see all these power lines running all the way down through the deal, and they got to try to transmit all this power down this power line right there. If you go out to any farm and you look, and you'll see on the fence line when they got cattle that they have a solar-powered fence charger. That solar-powered fence charger is a power station in itself. If you understand how to use that, you could build the equivalence of a solar-powered fence charger that would produce enough power to put in a storage bank to run at the very least lighting and cooling in somebody's house that was so far away from the grid that they didn't have a power line there. And so by using a combination of two different technologies, you quite literally have just increased the efficiency of what this thing is capable of doing. One of the little miniaturized solar power fence chargers has a lot more power to it than you can imagine. And those doggone things, that they're set up for like, somebody's got like 200 and some odd acres, and they have a section of it sectioned off for the cattle, and so they energize that entire wire all the way around those cattle so that the cattle won't try to bust through the fence. They go up there, they get shocked by it a few times, and the cattle stay inside the fence. And then after a while, you don't even have to have it on because they're afraid of the fence. They don't want to go near it because the last time they did, they got shocked. But that technology is already in existence. It's already off the store shelves. And using the storage system the way I'm talking about and this other system, you could take those small ones right there, put them out there where people need electricity, and use that electricity to take the high voltage and store it into storage banks, then in turn bleed them over to the equivalence of a battery, which is the modern day supercapacitors or boost capacitors, and they could run lighting systems where they needed to without having to be connected completely to the power grid. And that would buy them some time to do other upgrades. So let's keep going here.
End of 2017, they had 21 ultra-high voltage lines crisscrossing the country, and they're thinking even bigger. Right now, they're constructing a 1.1 million volt transmission line that can carry the output of 12 power plants 3,200 kilometers. Couple that with ABB's development of high voltage DC circuit breakers that can allow for a grid structure, and Siemens' claim that DC lines cost less than AC lines over a certain distance, and you've got the foundations for a global grid and a Thomas Edison comeback for the ages. That would allow for some pretty nifty tricks, like taking energy from solar panels that are in a part of the world that's still sunny, and zipping it to other parts of the world where it's dark. It could actually make renewable energy that's generated in remote areas more viable. It's not that outlandish. In 2016, the U.S. actually had plans to send wind energy to Tennessee that was generated in Oklahoma. Why Oklahoma? Because that's where the wind comes sweeping down the plains! Show tunes aside, State Grid even claims a global grid could harness wind power generated at the North Pole and solar energy generated at the equator. And if it's DC, we could ditch those AC-DC converters your electronics need that get all hot and waste about one-fifth of your household's energy. A global DC grid is a green dream. Will it ever happen? Almost definitely not. The cost would be astronomical, over $50 trillion, and the politics are way too messy. Control of a country's power grid is a major national security issue, and any entity that built, owned, or operated another country's power supply would be extremely powerful. So, a global grid is a really cool idea. That's probably never going to happen. Resistance is a big problem of the first order in energy grids, but superconductors could solve that. Marin tells you all about them here. Though a global grid is unlikely, State Grid has signed a deal with companies in Japan, Korea, and Russia with the goal of creating a Northeast Asian supergrid. Think it'll happen? Let us know in the comments and subscribe while you're down there. And thanks for watching Seeker.
Okay, so all these folks are pretty much going about it the wrong doggone way, and because the industry out there wants to be able to make money off electricity. So, that, with that said, they're not going to want to try to get people independent. Well, with the solar panels, those solar panels are capable of producing more than you can possibly imagine, doing a lot more work than what they're doing right now. They're basically using their resistance. The resistive loads that they're trying to run these things off of, they go from a solar panel to a solar panel control box into basically an inverter system. You know, the charge controller goes from solar panel to a charge controller to a doggone battery bank. From the battery bank goes to a inverter system that then in turn pushes the AC power out to run their doggone appliances. You could bypass the charge controller. You don't need it anymore. You could use that voltage coming off of that instead of having that loss in the system, which is the charge controller, which takes and steps down the power that those solar panels make so that you don't overcharge your batteries. It measures the voltage in the battery, and when the voltage in the battery gets high enough, it shuts itself off so that you don't overcharge your battery. But meantime, while that's occurring, the solar panel is not producing electricity. And why? Because those solar panels are able to produce a lot more voltage than what you're able to use. It gets wasted in the way that we use it. But if you took that energy off of that system and you stored that power right directly from the solar panel, then you wouldn't need the charge controller. When you got from the point where you want to bring it down into storage, if you needed something to step it down, such as a resistor or whatever, to only allow so much current to flow through into the batteries, then from that point on, you got the inverter system. So you took a big hindrance out of the system, which is the charge controller itself. The charge controller only has one job, and that is to resist the amount of power that those solar panels can actually produce. And so with that said, they're capable of producing a lot more power, and if you understand that, and the concept that I'm telling you about the doggone way that we use electricity, we don't need the current at that point yet. We don't need that current. We need that voltage that doggone solar panel is capable of producing. That's what we need. Because that voltage pressure is what gets the work done. That voltage pressure. It's like if you've got a tire that the max PSI on that tire is 50 PSI. I can't just take a 50 PSI pump and pump that tire up. I have to have more pressure than that tire requires in order to be able to fill that tire up. So I'm going to need at least 60 PSI to get that tire anywhere close to 50 PSI. So now that I understand that, if I have 1,000 PSI, it ain't going to take no time for that pressure to air that tire up. And so the same thing applies with voltage. So if you got a storage bank that is capable of holding a massive amount of pressure, and you got a power source such as a solar panel that is producing way more power than that storage thing can actually handle, it's putting that power into that storage so rapidly, pressurizing it. And then from that point on, you're bleeding that power off as you need it, but that tank continues to stay full on demand. And so therefore, you get your current back. You get the current that you need to run your appliances. So it's not that we don't have enough energy, it's the way that we're using it is the problem. We got more power than we need. We don't have to get out more than we put in. We don't have to worry about zero point or over unity or any of that kind of stuff. Energy is free, regardless of what you say. The doggone solar panels, they cost you money. But once you got them, You got years and years and years worth of work out of those things. If you use them properly, you'll get double the time out of it. You don't have to worry about these things failing because of you're using too much power or whatever. The inverter systems don't need near the amount of power. If you look at the way the inverter system is engineered, it's got step up and step down transformers peppered all through the doggone thing. But the transistors, the power MOSFETs, and all that stuff inside there don't require near the amount of power to change that DC to an AC. With a voltage, my brain just shut off. So, with a voltage rectifier, if you got a 1,000-volt rectifier that will run at 100 amps, you don't need the current to run that. You can change an AC into a DC wave with a voltage rectifier. It will only allow the current to flow one way. And so, you don't need all these other step-up and step-down transformers. All you need to do is understand that that doggone voltage rectifier can do the job. So if you hook that thing directly to that solar panel and then measure the voltage out there, you're going to be surprised at how much voltage you get out of one of those solar panels. The voltage is the pressure. The voltage is what does the work. We can take that power, we can speed it up and slow it down with fast switches such as transistors, 555 timers, MOSFETs, and so on down the line. And if necessary, we could do it mechanically. Mechanically would be the least one that you'd want to use, unless you was using something like wind power to trigger a switch. Turn it off and on, off and on, off and on. But with the modern day technology, the silicone technology that's in the transistors and such, it does the job for you. And it doesn't need near the current to do it. The way that those things work is so ridiculously simple once you understand. And once they reach the thermal breakdown point, they will fail. It's as simple as that. But that doggone bridge rectifier that I got is a 1,000 volt up to 100 amp. And if you ran it at its maximum capacity, it would get hot within a while and then it would basically burn itself out and it would fail. I know a friend of mine basically is completely off the grid and he runs his the conventional way and those things get hot, they burn up and he has to replace them frequently. But running the way that I keep trying to tell him to run those things, they will never get hot, they will never need to be replaced, and they'll still do the job. So, building the perfect transformer is easy job if you have the tools and the resources to back you up. Let's see what this one is.
Hi, I'm Sven Yakov. The title of this presentation is the Flyback Converter. This converter belongs to the family of converters with isolation, and as such, it is extremely useful when designing a DC-to-DC converter to operate off the power line. The flyback converter is extremely popular, using many, many applications, including chargers and other applications. Let me just mention that the name flyback comes from an analog TV circuitry in which there was a beam of electrons sweeping the screen, and the flyback circuitry was actually responsible for moving beam and then bringing it back very quickly, hence the name flyback. Before starting with the topology itself, with the circuit itself, let me say a few words about coupled inductor, which is the basis of this converter, the flyback converter. Now, a coupled inductor is something that looks like a transformer, but it is not a transformer. The difference being that in a transformer, if you have current coming in, say, in one winding, it'll come out from the other one winding, and no energy is stored in the core. Now, in the case of a coupled inductor, being an inductor, when you have a current coming in, there may not be any current coming out at this point. Energy is stored in the core, and then at the later stage, you can get this energy back through another winding. Nonetheless, when you look at the ratios of currents and voltages, the coupled inductor behaves in this respect like a transformer. It's also important to note that the ratio of the inductances seen from each winding here and here is the ratio of the number of turns squared. So once you know the inductance in one side, you can calculate the inductance on the other side if you know the turns ratio.
Okay, basically what he said in basic language, when you got a regular transformer, you have a primary side of it, which is the side that may go to your wall outlet, and then you have a secondary side. The primary side takes that voltage and it basically energizes a sense of magnetic wave through the transformer core itself. Now, the old transformer cores are made out of laminated steel. They got like lamination over them, and they're separated because using that process of induction, it causes those transformer cores to actually get hot. That heat is a bad thing when it comes to the insulation that's on the copper windings. And so when it gets to the point where that magnetic field expands and collapses from the primary, that magnetic field changes in the core, which induces a current in through the secondary. Determine on how many windings you have on the secondary will determine whether you're stepping the voltage up or you're stepping it down. And it also means the thickness of the wire will determine whether you got current or whether you got voltage. So a really thin winding, say 2,000 turns of really thin wire, will give you a really high voltage, higher frequency on the secondary. So it's ridiculously simple. When you get into the flyback drivers, they use a different material because they're actually going to store a little bit of that magnetism temporarily in the material, which in the flyback drivers, flyback transformers, they use a material called ferrite, which is basically made out of, what the heck did they call that? Go ask the gold prospectors. It's that black sand. I can't remember the name of it right off the gate. I'll remember it when I ain't thinking about it. But nonetheless, when you induce a current in the primary, it magnetizes that ferrite temporarily, and so that magnetism in that thing is kind of stored there so that when that field begins to collapse, it induces a current into the secondary, and it doesn't get hot because of the way that you're doing this, that the secondary will basically ramp that voltage up. So the flyback design inside your TV set was to ensure that you could actually do this without generating a lot of heat like the standard transformer cores, like the old style ballast or even the doggone neon sign transformers that actually had an iron core transformer in there. Those iron core transformers, because of the current going to the primary, caused the transformer to get hot, and you could only run them so long, otherwise they'd get too hot and they'd burn up. And too much feedback from the high voltage source back in there would actually burn the wires up as well. So there were, you know, negatives about it. But with these new style ferrite cores inside the TV set, they were able to get the high voltage they needed to energize the particles inside your TV set and get them to do what they needed them to do so you could watch TV. But they're both ridiculously simple concepts, both of which could be energized by a solid state circuitry such as a transistor off of a battery. You basically just produced an inverter style system. You change the DC into an AC because you're pulsing, you're switching it on and off real fast, causing this AC wave. Once you understand that simple concept right there, building the perfect transformer is ridiculously simple. Let's go.
Let me go and mention another point, which is sometimes misunderstood. We all have the feeling that if you have a current through an inductor, and then you interrupt it, you have you generate high voltages. The reason being that the state space equation of an inductor states that voltage is L times the IDT. Interruption of the current in a abrupt way means that the IDT is very high, consequently a high voltage will be generated. Now in a coupled inductor, situation could be that when, say, this is now a coupled inductor with two windings, one-to-one in this case, and say this switch is on and current is flowing in this direction. This here shows how the switches are controlled, this diagram. Here is switch 1 and then switch 2. Now current is going in, building up into a magnetic field, and then at this point of time, S1 is opened, and immediately S2 is closed, shown here. Well, the current went into the dot in here. It'll still go into the dot in here. It'll continue here, and there is actually no interruption of the magnetic field. So you can interrupt the current if the magnetic field is sort of supported by another winding, another current. Now, in the case of a coupled inductor, which will be connected, say, to two voltages, and here is again the same switching arrangement, what you will see is that when V1 is connected, current will go up linearly because the IDT, we just said it actually in just a different way, is V over L. V is constant, L is constant, so we have a constant slope here. There is an interruption here in terms of the switches changing, like S1 is open and then S2 is conducting. And consequently, the current, if this is a one-to-one, the peak current will be exactly the same, and the current will now go down. The reason it will go down because I've put here a voltage of reverse polarity. So when the polarity is reversed, there is the IDT of a different polarity too. Okay? Important to know that in this case, the I peak and I peak will be the same. Now, in the general case, if it's a 1 to N ratio, then of course what you'll see is a similar picture in terms of the current going up because of the constant V1 voltage when S1 is on, and then there is a switching of the current to the other.
Alright, that's a pretty high tech explanation right there. Simple of this is that when you raise the voltage, the current drops. You don't have near the flow. You've got thinner windings, you got more windings, you're putting 120 volts in there, you're ramping it up like in the microwave oven transformer to a couple thousand volts. So the difference is that, you know, you don't no longer have the current, you've got the voltage that you need. And it doesn't take near the amount of power to induce that current into it. All you need is that magnetic field to expand and collapse. You can take a 9-volt battery and a little magnetic ballast, and you can take the 9-volt battery by itself, and you can put your thumbs on that battery, and it, even though it has current, it doesn't have the high voltage, and so you won't get shocked. But if you take a magnetic ballast and you put that one of the wires on there, and then you got your thumb on the other wire, and you tap it on there, you will feel nothing at first, because the current just flowed into the magnetic ballast. But if you release one of those wires off that battery while still holding both of those wires, that flyback, that magnetic field collapsing, will shoot a high voltage into your hand and shock the crud out of you. That's the simple of it. We can capture that flyback. And so the way that these flyback deals work is that it basically the field expanding and collapsing rapidly is able to ramp that voltage up, and you're able to pull some power back off of it on the down as the field's going down as well. That's not what they teach you in the industry, but that's what the case is. They've used these microwave oven transformers for Tesla coils. They've used flyback drivers out of TVs and CRTs for Tesla coils. All you needed was that high voltage, high frequency, mixed with a spark gap for your timing, and you're inducing that high voltage, high frequency into the primary, and then it makes a magnetic field that goes up to secondary, and you're, by pulsing it before the next field in line collapses, you keep bumping it up and bumping it up, and all that high voltage builds up pressure on top of the top load of that, and then whenever it finally gets pressurized enough, all that energy ionizes all the air around it, and it starts to look for a path to ground so that the nature can put it back to where it was. That's where those fancy lightning bolts come from, the top load of that Tesla coil. And if you hit the right frequency range, you can transmit it just like a radio. This is what radios have been doing forever and a day. You got all these frequency ranges out there that you're on one radio station, that's the only one you can hear. Until you tune into the next one, you're not going to be able to hear that. So we can literally build receivers that would grab those signals on the way by, wouldn't interrupt somebody's listening on the other side over there, but you could harness that energy from all the different wireless technologies that's going on all over the place. Like taking that energy and then storing it and then using that energy in the same fashion, you can ramp it up and turn it back into whatever voltage you need by the time it's all said and done. So, it's not rocket science, folks. It really isn't. I'm going to try to give you an easier explanation of a flyback deal here. Let me see if this one is the one.
A flyback transformer, FBT, also called a line output transformer, LUPT, is a special type of electrical transformer. It was initially designed to generate high voltage sawtooth signals at a relatively high frequency. In modern applications, it is used extensively in switched mode power supplies for both low 3V and high voltage over 10 kV supplies. The primary winding of the flyback transformer is driven by a switch from a DC supply, usually a transistor. When the switch is switched on, the primary inductance causes the current to build up in a ramp. An integral diode connected in series with the secondary winding prevents the formation of secondary current that would eventually oppose the primary current ramp. When the switch is turned off, the current in the primary falls to zero. The energy stored in the magnetic core is released to the secondary as the magnetic field in the core collapses. The voltage in the output winding rises very quickly, usually less than a microsecond, until it is limited by the load conditions. Once the voltage reaches such level as to allow the secondary current to flow, then the current in the secondary winding begins to flow in the form of a descending ramp. The cycle can then be repeated. If the secondary current is allowed to discharge completely to zero, no energy stored in the core, then it is said that the transformer works in discontinuous mode, DCM. When some energy is always stored in the core, and the current waveforms look trapezoidal rather than triangular, then this is continuous mode, CCM. This terminology is used especially in power supply transformers. The low voltage output winding mirrors the sawtooth of the primary current and, for example for television purposes, has fewer turns than the primary, thus providing a higher current. This is a ramped and pulsed waveform that repeats at the horizontal line frequency of the display. The flyback vertical portion of the sawtooth wave can be a potential problem to the flyback transformer if the energy has nowhere to go. The faster a magnetic field collapses, the greater the induced voltage, which, if not controlled, can flash over the transformer terminals. The high frequency used permits the use of a much smaller transformer. In television sets, this high frequency is about 15 kilohertz, 15.625 kHz for PAL, 15.734 kHz for NTSC, and vibrations from the transformer core caused by magnetostriction can often be heard as a high-pitched whine. In modern computer displays, the frequency can vary over a wide range, from about 30 kHz to 150 kHz. The transformer can be equipped with extra windings, whose sole purpose is to have a relatively large voltage pulse induced in them when the magnetic field collapses as the input switch is turned off. There is considerable energy stored in the magnetic field, and coupling it out via extra windings helps it to collapse quickly, and avoids the voltage flashover that might otherwise occur. The pulse train coming from the flyback transformer windings is converted to direct current by a simple half-wave rectifier. There is no point in using a full-wave design as there are no corresponding pulses of opposite polarity. One turn of a winding often produces pulses of several volts. In older television designs, the transformer produced the required high voltage for the CRT accelerating voltage directly with the output rectified by a simple rectifier. In more modern designs, the rectifier is replaced by a voltage multiplier. Color television sets also have to use a regulator to control the high voltage. The earliest sets used a shunt vacuum tube regulator, but the introduction of solid-state sets employed a simpler voltage-dependent resistor. The rectified voltage is then used to supply the final anode of the cathode ray tube. There are often auxiliary windings that produce lower voltages for driving other parts of the television circuitry. The voltage used to bias the varictor diodes in modern tuners is often derived from the flyback transformer, line output transformer, LOPT. In tube sets, a one or two turn filament winding is located on the opposite side of the core as the HV secondary, used to drive the HV rectifier tube's heater.
Okay, what some people may hear when they hear that kind of stuff is a bunch of high-tech mumbo-jumbo that they don't understand. The simple of it, because I understand what's going on right there, is that if we want to produce high voltage, it's ridiculously simple. And we can take that high voltage and we can change it. We can actually change it multiple different voltages for an output. So we can build literally a smart transformer that will only put amount of energy necessary to run any given object using all the tricks that we've got with capacitors and transistors and resistors and MOSFETs and all that kind of stuff. Rectifiers, we got all the solid state equipment necessary to do it, a no moving part generator that will take power from any power source such as a battery, a solar panel, or whatever. You don't even need the battery if you're not going to try to store that power from that point. You could directly drive any of these systems from the solar panel itself which takes completely out of the equation the charge controller, which is wasting energy anyway because it has resistance in there. It basically shuts everything off and doesn't allow that amount of power that that solar panel is actually able to produce. The same thing with a wind turbine. Same thing, has to have a charge regulator on there. If you took that power off and you use that power, store that power, you'd have that power on demand in storage, and you could use all these different things to do what you need to do with it. If you need to turn it into DC, you throw a rectifier in the equation that's able to handle whatever voltage pressure that you have in the thing. It will never burn up. It will never get hot, so therefore it will never fail. It'll never reach its thermal breakdown point. So if the world is ready for it, we've got incredible efficiency, we've got free energy, we've got every single piece of the puzzle necessary to resolve the so-called energy poverty and the energy crisis. We don't need to necessarily get rid of fossil fuel, what they like to call fossil fuel. I've been into that, down that road so many times trying to tell everybody there ain't no such thing as fossil fuel, but it doesn't matter. Just give them... Mom said you got to humor those folks. So anyway, to make a long story short, when the world is ready for it, there are people like myself that are ready to show them exactly how to get it done. But it's going to take more than I have in order to get this information out to enough people to get it enough attention to get anyone involved in doing this. I'm still going to build a prototype. I have been building prototypes. I still got more to show everyone. And I keep showing every single anomaly, every single idea that I can possibly show, hoping that somebody will take those ideas and they will run with it. I'm not going to go the way that Stan Myers went. I'm not going to go the way that John Bedini and all the different alternative researchers that tried to give the world what they wanted. That look what they did to Tesla. They mocked and ridiculed him, but they still, to this very day, you're using Tesla technology. I learned a lot from Tesla. And the things that I learned from him was that we have more energy than we could ever use in a trillion, trillion lifetimes. We're just doing it wrong. John Bedini tried to tell everybody that. And there are other researchers who tried to tell everybody out that. But to get them to listen, to get them to get their head out of that school book long enough, to get them to stop misquoting the laws of physics and thermodynamics, all that. That's the trick. Folks, you've been listening to Mad Science Show. And I've been trying to get any one of these messages out there. Never once had a message that, you know, what they call going viral. You have to share it, and you have to get somebody else to share it, and so on down the line, so people can start hearing this kind of stuff, these solutions, so I can get more people in these chat rooms, so I can tell more people. That's it. I need to be able to tell more people. I'm not trying to sell anyone anything. I'm trying to tell more people how they can do this if they want to really solve these issues. When it comes down to fresh water, we've got that. When it comes down to keeping food fresh, we got that. When it comes down to energy, we got that. When it comes down to cleaning up any other style of energy, whether it be nuclear or what they like to call fossil fuel, we got that. We got every single solution to every single problem under the sun, and we just don't have the ears to listen. The environmentalists are out there supporting a sign, holding up a sign, a wooden stick with a paper sign that says save the trees, instead of backing people like myself and all these other alternative energy researchers like Russ from RWG Research and all the other ones out there. And Stephen Gibbons, he posted a page that has tons and tons and tons of alternative energy research links. We provided all the information and links to information. He did a wonderful job on this. check it out. If you go into the Super Chat chat room and click on Steven's resource page, you'll find the link to all the links that he put for alternative energy out there. So it's not like we don't have the information. It's not like we don't have the platform. We just don't have the people. It's we the people's going to resolve this issue. It's not the system. Folks, if you like this message, please share it. Peace and love, everybody. Take care.
What is the dream? The dream is to bring brilliant minds from every nation together to solve the world's problems, one positive pebble at a time. It will be we, the people of the world, that bring about true change, peace, and love to all. Governments never solve any problem, only create them. Wars, starvation, sickness, oppression, financial slavery, death and destruction is what governments do best. When all the military might of nations is used to destroy other nations, the question has to be asked, why not use that military strength for good? Feed the hungry, shelter the homeless, heal the sick, and so forth. True representation of truth, freedom, and justice comes from we the people, and it never came from slick-talking politicians that say whatever they have to get elected, and then regulate away your freedoms. There is no reason to have starving babies in the world of today. Yet, it goes on. There's no reason for wars and sickness, yet it continues. We as the people must stop feeding that beast that is eating humanity alive. We the people of all nations have the power to bring about a literal heaven on earth. You as an individual have more power than you can possibly imagine. You have the power of the spoken word. You have the power of the pen. The power of action, and most of all, the power of love. It is time to use this power to make our world a better place. We are the founding fathers, mothers, sisters, and brothers of our children, and of our children's children's future. Into the future and beyond, what we do today will define the world that they live in tomorrow. Let us from every nation come together and make that future a great one.
It was that ant that stood up to me.
Yeah, but we can forget about him.
Yeah, it was just one ant.
Ooh.
One ant.
Yeah, you're right. It's just one ant.
Yeah, boss. They're puny.
Puny? Say, let's pretend this brain is a puny little ant.
Did that hurt?
Nope.
Well, how about this one?
Are you kidding?
Well, how about this?
You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up. Those puny little ants outnumber us 100-1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life. It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back.
Does anybody else want to stay?
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Ah! Ah! Ah!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
I got a laptop. I make music with my friends. I've got a laptop, baby. I make music with my friends. There it is.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch.